T-minus 71. Cavalieri Observatory, Trento, Italy. Almost 2 hours after receiving a mysterious call from a Turkish stranger, Timo Fiori was relieved to finally welcome a trusted native speaker into his observatory complex to directly translate the caller's recorded words. In the time before the translator arrived, she was a female college student who happened to live next door to one of Timo's staff and had understandably been fast asleep when the unusual request came in, Timo had just as understandably undertaken his own attempts to garner some meaning from the call. His phone's call recording software also included a voice-to-text transcription function, which would have made an online translation tremendously easy were it not for the fact that the caller had spoken much too quickly for the software to make any reliable sense of his words. Some words jumped out after several listens, seemingly when the man had stressed the most remarkable parts of his message, but Timo tried to keep a level head. What he thought he knew so far entailed both positives and negatives, in that Billy was apparently being held against his will, but was only in such a predicament because his team had unearthed a categorically evident visual representation of alien beings in contact with humans. The artifact in question, if both the caller and the automatic transcription were correct, seemed to date back 12,000 years. 20 minutes after arriving, the young woman found herself repeating over and over again that she was absolutely sure of what the man said, that the partially excavated pillar at Dortlu Tepe, according to Billy's own testimony, showed a scene in which an extraterrestrial being wasn't just walking on Earth, but was in fact connected to its human contactee via a physical cable. "And Billy insisted they weren't the messengers," she repeated. "The man is very clear about that. He says it 3 times. They were much too tall, with skulls much too long. This is the address where he's being held, inside an official police building, and the man really wanted to stress that Billy is being treated well. He's in a cell with Mesut Demir, if that name means anything to anyone. The situation is complicated, politically."
"Thank you for all of this," Timo said, rubbing his temples in confused thought as he spoke. He turned around to include his staff members, trusted absolutely, in this conversation.
"Mesut is the very senior archaeologist who Billy put in charge of day-to-day operations at the Dortlu Tepe site, so his name isn't insider knowledge or anything like that. And damn right this is politically complicated. Even if this had been found a decade ago, it would have been politically complicated. But now..."
No one replied as Timo thought silently for several seconds.
"Then the guy is hardly going to admit Billy is being treated badly, even if he is," he went on.
While the others racked their brains for an angle that made sense and shared some fleeting thoughts that clearly didn't, Timo studied the new written translation that his helpful visitor had generated. The caller had provided no identifying information about himself, naturally enough, but he hadn't even given a clue as to how he knew these things, let alone why he should be trusted. Although the motive at least appeared clear, with there being nothing obvious to achieve by telling Timo about Billy's incarceration other than hoping he could bring it to an end, Timo didn't even feel safe assuming that the man's motives were pure. After his harrowing near-death experience when an IED ripped through a busy presentation room in his old Fiori Frontieri HQ in Colorado Springs, Timo's body and mind were both still scarred from bitter experience. Emma Ford, as she was at the time, had been sitting next to Timo when the explosion hit and initially looked to have come off worse. He missed Emma's input and longed for simpler days when he and Team McCarthy had been neatly positioned on the same page, the days before Dan had aligned himself with the likes of President Slater and William Godfrey, far too closely for Timo's liking. Timo still liked to think of Dan as a friend, but their relationship had all but broken down under the strain of a political situation neither wanted to be part of. Dan had never asked for any of it, as Timo understood only too well, and it was easy to see why he thought that uniting powerful governments under a common banner and serving as a unifying figurehead was the best way to ensure peace. A lifelong distrust for career politicians of all ilks gave Timo other ideas, but he lacked clarity on how else Dan should have gone about things. Indeed, on the one heated occasion when Emma had finally lost her patience and told him to either present a workable alternative model for managing future contact or shut up about it once and for all, the billionaire had been stuck for words. In the intervening months, he had neither spoken to anyone in Birchwood nor even set foot in the United States. Billy was the only American friend Timo had kept hold of, and really the only friend he still had who wasn't an employee. This thought momentarily troubled Timo as he realized that even Billy was on the payroll in his capacity as dig coordinator. But like Alessandro and a handful of others, Billy was a true friend, and the thought of him locked in a Turkish jail cell made Timo's skin crawl, his heart quicken, and his blood boil. Billy was a good and innocent man doing good and innocent work, and he deserved far better than this. As the wee small hours of Thursday night gave way to Friday morning, Timo's focus moved swiftly from analyzing the transcript to taking meaningful action to remedy the acute problem it had brought to light. This proved tougher than he could ever have imagined, with the challenge of explaining what he wanted, a direct line to his friend in custody, proving almost impossible to request without giving away what he felt was too much information. Timo's business interests had a significant presence in Turkey, as they did almost everywhere else, so he had no shortage of relatively powerful people to lean on. But even mentioning that Billy was being held would have risked the story getting out in a manner that could do more harm than good, since the kind of people Timo could lean on most certainly weren't friends and would only offer assistance on a strictly quid pro quo basis. The incoming call had been traced to a public telephone 3 miles from the building where Billy was apparently being held, and no one had picked up any of Timo's return calls. Ultimately, as the sun began to rise and he could no longer bear the thought of Billy wondering when his supposedly powerful backer would find out where he was and sweep in to do something about it, he called the police headquarters and, with assistance from the endlessly helpful college student turned interpreter, politely asked to be put through to whoever was in charge. From there, the phone rang again as Timo was connected to someone else.
"This is Timo Fiori," he said. "I believe you have—" "This is Cenk Manogan," the man replied, needlessly announcing his own name in what Timo didn't need a local interpreter to recognize as a power move. "And this is bigger than money, Mr. Fiori, so don't even waste your time."
The call ended, leaving only a dead tone in Timo's ear. Timo slammed his fist into a nearby desk, then tried to compose himself with a few deep breaths.
"Well," he sighed, "Plan B it is."